You're tuned in to Listen Local, the bi-weekly webcast from your neighborhood news source, Mission Local, brought to you via BFF.fm. We've done a lot of reporting lately about how complicated it is to regulate short-term rentals. Short-term or vacation rentals are often referred to under the catch-all phrase Airbnb, which is the biggest platform for booking these short-term rentals. Renting to visitors on Airbnb can actually make more money than renting an apartment out to one steady long-term tenant in some cases. And that's why the Board of Supervisors is trying to figure out how to keep short-term rentals from gobbling up units that would otherwise go to the long list of long-term renters looking for a place to live in the city. San Francisco and other large cities experiencing housing shortages both for rent and for sale are, of course, very concerned about anything that could further reduce the housing available. Very few people have any problem with tenants renting out rooms in their apartments or houses. That sort of sharing for profit seems to benefit everyone involved. The problem arises when landlords withhold empty units from the rental market in order to turn them into more lucrative short-term vacation rentals, or even evict long-term tenants in order to put the apartment on Airbnb. To look at these issues, we've brought in an expert. Our guest today is Alex Marcusi, who is earning his master's at the UC Berkeley School of Public Policy. Alex wrote a report for the senior policy advisor of the planning department, and he's here to help us clarify some of the issues around short-term rentals. Alex, welcome.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Excited to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. Lydia Chavez, our editor and the author of many of our recent articles on this issue, is in the studio as well. Hey, Lydia.
Good morning.
So if you're listening and you have anything to add, get in touch via Twitter. Tweet at us. Our handle is @MLNow, and we will be here until 10 a.m. So, Alex, how big of a problem does San Francisco have with short-term rentals?
Oh, wow, that's the million-dollar question. I would say not the biggest problem in the world, but it's certainly something that we need to worry about. There's been a number of reports that come out recently trying to quantify how many units are being taken off the market because of Airbnb. My report found probably 500 to 1,000. The city's budget and legislative analyst had a slightly more kind of aggressive take at the assumptions and ended up with a number closer to 1 to 2,000. And so people will look at either of these numbers and say, well, there's 800,000 people in San Francisco. Like, how could this be a big deal? And what I try to keep pointing out is there are only maybe 2% of the apartments available for rent at any one time. And so that's actually a huge percentage of the vacant apartments available.
Okay. So kind of to address that, the city already has some legislation on the books as far as short-term rentals are concerned, which basically boil down to you can Airbnb your place for 90 days if you're not at home and an unlimited number of days if you are at home. What is your take on how that is working?
Well, they're trying. They're trying hard. But right now, you know, I think the consensus, both in the planning department and also among lawmakers is that it is an unenforceable piece of legislation.
So we actually, I hear that thrown around a lot, and I have a sense of why that is, but maybe you can dig into that a little more. What exactly is unenforceable?
So I think the first thing to keep in mind is that it's impossible to keep the people who, or to catch the people who don't even want to register at all, who just want to fly under the radar and do whatever they want and never come to the city to register. Beyond those people, which is probably 80% of the short-term rental hosts out there, it's impossible to know when someone's actually in their apartment. So you mentioned before that you've got this cap, right? If you're renting out your entire unit, you have a maximum of 90 days, but what stops someone from just saying, oh, I was there. I was there every day. Like, how are we going to actually catch these people?
Yeah. I think one of the supervisors at a board of supervisors meeting about this recently joked, you know, we're not going to put probation anklets on everybody who registers for Airbnb.
There will be no drones for short-term rentals.
Surveillance. So basically you can't tell if someone's home or not. So it doesn't really matter. So what is the policy suggestion to address the fact that you can't tell whether a rental is hosted or unhosted?
So there's been a lot of different possibilities thrown around. One would be going through the short-term rental hosting platform, which essentially is saying, you know, dear Airbnb, please take down every listing on your website that doesn't have a short-term rental registry number. And if you don't, we'll fine you, you know, $1,000 per listing per day or something. Other options would be to require regular data from the short-term rental platform so that we can actually see which units are being kind of rented out as a commercial, full-time, short-term Airbnb hotel and which ones are actually complying with the law. And then I think the third possibility would be to use tax data and say, well, you know, this guy made $100,000 last year. Like, he must be running a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what are the difficulties of each of those, and which of those is most likely to be part of any for new legislation?
So,
I mean, what prevents the city from just saying to Airbnb, if you want to do business in this city, you have to, the people who are doing short-term Airbnbs have to be registered with the city first. You cannot accept them until they're registered with the city.
You know, I think they could try, but it would just be a lawsuit. You know, and I don't think Airbnb has wanted to comply voluntarily with anything. I know that the city has asked numerous times, like, hey, work with us. Like, well, let's make this work. Could you take down the worst offenders at least? And most of the short-term rental platforms have just straight up refused or not even returned their phone calls. So I think they could go the route of New York and say, we're going to subpoena all your records. Like, we want to know. But to date, they haven't chosen to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like there's a little bit of hesitation on that front. Also, I keep hearing about maybe getting anonymized data or getting identifying information redacted, and I believe your report calls for getting non-anonymized data. Can you explain why and why that's important?
Yeah, I mean, so my report essentially relied on anonymized data. I had web-scraped data, so I had everything except for the addresses and, you know, how much money people actually made. So if I got anonymized data, you know, whoop-de-doo. Like, I don't have the address. I don't have the person's name. How am I going to figure out, you know, I could say unit 123 is a short-term rental hotel, but I have no ability to actually go catch the person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seemed like with the data that's already available from what I was reading, it's really hard to tell how much money any given person is making, how many nights people are spending where. It sort of relies a lot on averaging out or getting a range of possibilities using the number of reviews and...
Yeah, I mean, so everyone who's tried to analyze this essentially jumped through a bunch of hoops just to come up with ranges and estimates. And, you know, the methodologies aren't super important and they're definitely not very interesting. But what's definitely true and what Airbnb has put out there is that the average host rents somewhere between 70 and 80 days, the median host, that is. And they make around $13,000 a year, but that's the median. That's the middle, right? $13,000 a year was the most recent report. So, you know, the majority of hosts don't make a dime, right? Yeah. They might do it a weekend a year or something when there's the sale, you know, the big conference or something. But what that obscures is that the people we really care about are not the average users. It's the hotel operators. It's the landlords who say, instead of renting out to that family, I'm going to have a hotel.
And what prompts somebody to make that decision, do you think?
Money. Like, why else, right? Sure. I think the first thing is that they're looking at the relative incentives, and they're saying, I can make, you know, $200 a night with Airbnb, or I can make, you know, however many thousands of dollars a year, and I can make more money on Airbnb. The other thing, of course, in San Francisco is that rent control exists, and landlords are terrified of rent control. They're really scared that if they get locked in with that tenant who decides, hey, I'm going to stay till I'm 85 years old, right, that they're going to lose a ton of money. And so there are certainly going to be some landlords who say, you know what, I can't make as much money with Airbnb, but it's still worth it.
Mm-hmm. So the cap that you recommended for hosted and unhosted, I believe, was 120 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these are sort of, this is sort of related. You also calculated a roughly a break-even point. So a point where a landlord would say, you know, I could rent the place, or I could make, you know, at this many nights, that much or more money on Airbnb. Can you talk a little bit about how the cap and that break-even point
sure.
interact?
So because we don't have perfect data, we have to just look at the incentives that landlords face. And so what the break-even point was trying to get at, and I came up with a number of about 213 nights, I think Airbnb said 210 or something like that, is that the average landlord in San Francisco has to rent out their apartment 200 plus days a year to make more money off Airbnb. And so we clearly want the cap to be below that. We don't want to incentivize landlords to go out there and convert all of their units. On the other hand, we want to make sure that people who are legitimately using Airbnb just to supplement their income, they're not removing long-term housing from the market, have the ability to generate as much income as they want and to bring those tourists into other neighborhoods and generate more businesses. So there's got to be kind of a balance, right? And so 120 days through both my report and also the report from the controller's office was the point at which we are incentivizing almost no apartments in San Francisco that have become vacant to be turned into short-term rental hotels.
But anything above that, the number begins to go up, so that you don't want to have the cap at the break-even point.
Right, because at the break-even point, it's, you know, most of new apartments, most vacant apartments are actually more profitable. That's not to say that, you know, in the current unregulated market, because without enforcement, it's essentially an unregulated market, that all of these apartments are getting flipped into short-term rental hotels. Some landlords just don't want to deal with it, and so they're never going to do it. But it's important when you're making policy to look at the incentives and to make sure that we have an appropriate cap that's going to be lower than the point at which we're just incentivizing everyone to create short-term rental hotels.
So it seems like in every city that Airbnb operates, where the city has tried to come in and sort of oversight some sort of policy regulating them, that there's been huge resistance, and that the only city that has really had some success in regulation, although I don't know exactly how it's working, and you may, is New York, in the state attorney going after the records. Do you think that eventually in San Francisco and elsewhere, it's just going to land in the courts, that there's no real play on Airbnb's part to say, well, let's figure this out? And the city doesn't have much leverage itself.
You know, I really hope Airbnb at some point says it's in our long-term best interest to really cooperate, because I love Airbnb. I love using it. And I think most people really do.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were them, I would say we've got 10, 15% of our users who are essentially running commercial bed and breakfasts. Like, let them go through the normal San Francisco bed and breakfast process and become a legal bed and breakfast. Our business is for the actual home sharers. So I think,
and by actual home sharers, you mean people who are there and who are just having guests casually.
It's still a business, right?
Sure.
But it's people for whom this is their home.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're out of town 2 weeks a year and they rent it out for 2 weeks, but it is their home. And so in New York, they eventually subpoenaed Airbnb. They got the real data, and they were able to catch a lot of the worst operators. Now, you know, of course, New York looks a lot different, the housing stock, than San Francisco. So you had entire buildings where a landlord would rent out every single room to Airbnb or on Airbnb. In San Francisco, that's not, you know, quite what we're facing, but I still think eventually we're going to have to subpoena them to get a better sense of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, unregulated or in its current state of de facto unregulation, do you think that that could be a reality, that we would just have landlords buy up a building and, like, I don't know, Ellis Act everyone in them and then just,
you know, I really hope
Airbnb
not.
The whole thing?
I'm sure it's going to happen. I'm sure it's already happened. There are so many pressures on tenants throughout the city. I mean, especially in the Mission, as everyone has seen, that Airbnb is just another incentive on top of all that. And, you know, landlords who want to get out of the business, they know that if they can evict every single person in their apartment building, they can sell it for way more money.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're going to do is they're going to Airbnb all of those vacant units until they can eventually get rid of everyone so that they can sell the building without anyone in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a slow but sure taking away long-term units from the market.
In a limited fashion, yeah. Right. I mean, this is not, let's remember, this is not the entire city being converted to short-term rentals. We're still talking about maybe 1,000 or 2,000 at the very most, but probably closer to 1,000 long-term rentals. Now, again, like, that matters. There, you know, according to the last census and, you know, the American Community Survey reported somewhere in the realm of 800 vacant units at any one time for rent in the Mission, right? Which is not that many.
No, that's not really
that's
a lot
really,
at all.
Like, so if you're looking for an apartment, you're already struggling.
Yeah. Especially
and,
when you think about how many other people are vying for those 800.
Oh, my God. That's why when you show up to an apartment, there's 20 people with applications and checks in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so when there's 800 of those available, and my report says there's about 100 short-term rental hotels in the Mission, like, that matters.
Yeah.
That sucks for a lot of people.
Can you talk a little bit about the geography and the sort of in unequal distribution of the Airbnbs and the problem?
Yeah, that was something I was really interested in, because San Francisco is not one neighborhood. It's a lot of very different looking and feeling neighborhoods. And what I found was that, you know, your Outer Sunsets, your Bayviews, like, they don't really have a lot of Airbnb short-term rental activity happening. It exists, but really it's in those central kind of gentrifying, exciting places where tourists want to go. So previously, tourists, like, they had to go to the hotel district downtown. And, like, that's not the most fun place for a lot of people. And it's also pretty expensive. You know, you're looking at $200 to $300 per night for a hotel room. Whereas instead, they would much prefer to go to the Mission, to Haight, you know, Castro areas, spend $180 a night, get a kitchen, feel like a local, get an authentic experience. And so what's happened is that the distribution is really, it's really uneven. It's really focused in those central neighborhoods,
which are also the focus of the most housing pressure, I imagine, right? Because everybody wants to vacation there, but everybody also wants to live there.
Yeah, they're great places to live.
So, of course, they attract a lot of people. But speaking of hotels, I know this wasn't the primary focus, but do you have any information on how short-term rentals have been affecting hotels and kind of whether or not that matters, I guess, to the industry? Like, is it a significant impact?
So there's been very limited academic research. There was one study. So, you know, this is all brand new. One study in Texas and Austin found that an increase in short-term rentals negatively impacts lower-priced hotel revenue, right?
Surprise.
Surprise.
Yeah.
So San Francisco, on the other hand, doesn't build new hotels. You know, we've got something like 200 new rooms coming in the line the next couple of years. It's also one of the most popular tourist destinations in the U.S. right now. And so for the last couple of years, occupancy rates are increasing. More and more people are coming to the same number of hotel rooms, and prices are continuing to rise. So the hotel industry could not care less. They are really in a good, happy place right now. They look at Airbnb and they say, listen, like, just compete on an even playing field, pay your hotel tax, and we'll be fine. I think where it matters is that you can look at the hotel industry to help project what might happen in the future. And what it's looking like is that there's going to be, you know, more and more and more people wanting to travel and visit San Francisco and not enough new hotel rooms to accommodate them. So my guess is that people are going to increasingly look to short-term rentals to kind of fulfill that need.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if short-term rentals as a result will then also just continue to rise in price sort of dramatically.
You know, it's hard to know. Yeah. It's really hard to know. I mean,
in terms of public policy, what you know, after you've been in the weeds of all of this for months probably, what is sort of the best way to regulate, do you think? I mean, you laid out three options at the very beginning, but which of those options really makes the most sense in terms of the city and in terms of Airbnb cooperating?
God, it's a tough question. I would probably think that the tax revenue is the kind of cleanest. Like, people who are renting out their units as short-term rentals are businesses, right? If I was running a bar and I was, you know, running it out of my backyard or out of my front window or something, like, I would expect the city to come to me and say, like, listen, register as a business, we'll treat you as a business, and we can work this out. And I think if we can enforce the laws and have everyone who's running an Airbnb register as a business, and we can audit their financials, and then we can actually regulate their use.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has a lot of potential. Of course, there's a lot of other different regulatory schemes, not talking about enforcement now, but just different regulatory schemes. You could look at geographic caps. So one thing that I worry about is that if you have a big apartment building in the Mission and it's 70% short-term rentals, you've lost something. You've really lost the sense of community, and you've lost kind of the long-term tenants that make the Mission the wonderful place it is. So I think in response to that, you could have things like geographic caps. So you allow 100 units short-term rentals in the Mission. You could also change whether short-term rentals are allowed in apartment buildings or in single-family homes, mm-hmm. and kind of the process for going through that, because you can imagine that the quality of life issues, which we haven't even touched here, like, right. you know, the bachelor party problem, essentially, is more of a problem in a 100-unit apartment building than it is in a single-family home where someone's living upstairs.
Mm-hmm. And that bachelor party problem is basically that Your neighbor's unit is an Airbnb, and you constantly have 20-somethings there.
Yeah, you got the tech bros coming next door, just drunk, ruining your life.
Yeah, cheering. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was wondering if maybe you could address a couple of reader questions that we got as comments on a story that Lydia wrote about this. Which, you know, maybe we have already approached. But so one person said, if a landlord has decided to keep a unit off the market because of various regulations they don't want to deal with, allowing them to list those units on Airbnb has zero impact on long-term housing. The fact that renting a unit for 24 days on Airbnb could cover operating costs doesn't mean that without that options, these landlords who have already said they wouldn't make their units available to long-term tenants would choose to make them available to long-term tenants.
That reader's totally correct. I could not agree more. And I think it's something that's hard to talk about in the public discussion because it's nuanced. We're talking about counterfactuals, right? What would have happened in that alternate universe where Airbnb didn't exist? And, you know, I think certainly it makes it so much easier that it's probably happening more, but it's the reader's correct. It's impossible to know. And I think this is an even bigger problem when you're trying to think about what to do with rent controlled apartments. If someone has, you know, so the controller's office had this unbelievable statistic that in 20% of apartments in San Francisco, there are more bedrooms than there are residents. There's a lot of slack housing out there. There's a lot of bedrooms that just no one uses. So to say that Airbnb is removing bedrooms from those apartments is just probably not true.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why we need to kind of have reasonable regulations that aren't too restrictive, because as the reader suggests and as my report points out, a lot of these instances are not actually removing housing. And we should encourage more economic use of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially, if they're not going to be rented out as long-term housing and we have a shortage for short-term rentals in terms of hotels
anyway.
We may as well stick them in the bedrooms that nobody's using anyway. All right, so another person, and I think you addressed this, but, you know, just in case, said that citywide averages are misleading. Airbnb rentals affect some neighborhoods greatly and others not at all. And we did talk about that. The only way to assess the impact of Airbnb on housing is to look at the number of Airbnb entire place rentals within a neighborhood or zip code. When offered on an ongoing basis, Airbnb entire place rentals are really vacation rentals.
Yeah, and I think this gets to the question of who are the bad actors. And every city looks at this differently. I think in San Francisco, we have come to somewhat of an agreement, at least among people who are debating this, that the people we worry about are those short-term rental hotels that are taking entire units off the market. And that's what my report did. So, you know, as I mentioned, the Mission had something like 70 or 80 minimum, right? This is the absolute minimum. It's probably a little bit more than that. Similarly, you know, I think the Castro had about 60. So there's geographic discrepancies in this, but it's still happening.
And I think you did look at the, didn't you look at the specific impact on particular neighborhoods as well and kind of break it down by neighborhood?
Yeah, no, I've got a map in there that shows the, both the incentive structures and the break-even points by neighborhood, as well as how many short-term rental hotels are happening in each neighborhood. And I think that's one reason why we might want to think about geographic caps, because, you know, quality of life issues, loss of long-term residence that kind of starts to erode communities and erode community institutions, those happen when you have a concentration of short-term rental hotels. And, you know, as the reader points out, we need to be concerned about that.
Have you gotten any interest in the geographic cap idea from the Board of Supervisors? Do you think that's sort of bubbling up?
You know, we're far enough along in the legislative process that I think it's probably too late. You know, we've got, we've got a one law in the books that's totally unenforceable, but that's really kind of the structure that we're building off of. And then another three amendments, none of which look at geographic. They're all about what is the proper cap and how do we enforce them.
So what they resolve on July 14th or whatever proposal they go for, it's likely to be just part of the process of regulating Airbnb, and that there'll be another iteration as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna see either a 60-day cap that Campos wants or a 120-day cap that Farrell and the mayor wants. And then there's a lot of other kind of details about who is allowed to sue who. Can it be your neighbors? Can it be the owners? Can it be a housing organization? And on and on and on and on.
Yeah. So a complex issue, but we are unfortunately out of time on the show. We're going to move on really quick to Neighborhood Notes, which is the part of the show where we bring you small tidbits from around the neighborhood. Mine is that I have been hearing rumors about a bee swarm that gathered on Cesar Chavez and I want to say Valencia this weekend. And I want to give a shout out to anybody who knows anything about that, because we'd be very interested in hearing the story of how I believe an amateur beekeeper came in and contained that swarm of bees. So hit us up if you know about that. Lydia?
What am I doing this neighborhood note? I'm definitely going to be Friday at the restoration of the mural at the Galleria. And there's also an interesting play. It looks like an interesting, fun play at the Z Space on The Bubble.
The Bubble.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Saturday night.
Perfect. That wraps up our show. You've been tuned in to Listen Local, brought to you by the staff of Mission Local. If you know something that we don't, that you shouldn't think we should, shoot us an email at info@missionlocal.com. After us, check out some electronic tunes and more from across the pond, brought to you by John Digital. Thanks for listening.
I've been trying to get pity from the start.